You are looking live at Chicken Dinner.
I bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
I think I'll take two chickens.
You're on riverboat gambling trips.
You're gonna die for some chickens.
Hey, what's your chicken dinner?
Someone is.
It was feathers yesterday. There was no chicken.
What you got riding on this game?
My daughter.
What a gambler.
It's Chicken Dinner.
Hey, Babalugas, we got a bet here.
Here's your host, Sam Panionovich.
It's called Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner right there, boys.
Let's get this thing going.
Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner. How about that?
Away we go. Chicken Dinner, Wednesday, May 25th, 2022. Follow on Twitter at ChickenXDinner. DMs always open for you. And subscribe to the podcast so you get this bad boy once it goes live. We will talk to Eric Eager from Pro Football Focus. He models the USFL, the WNBA, but he's ready for football season. Aren't we all? There's an NFL team Eager loves to win its division at plus money, and a fascinating conversation. Win totals versus fatter tail markets. You won't want to miss that conversation with Eric Eager. I wanted to begin this show with the red-hot Red Sox, who were plus 200 to make the playoffs going into the series against Seattle. After sweeping Seattle and pounding Dylan Cease and the White Sox on Tuesday night, guess what that price is right now? Plus 140 and falling fast. Now, you don't want to be a prisoner of the moment, but if you think about the Red Sox schedule, after they finish this series against Chicago, 10 of their next 10 games will be against awful baseball teams. 5 against Baltimore, 2 against Cincinnati, 3 against Oakland. It's not to say that the Red Sox are going to make the postseason, but if you made that bet before the Seattle series, plus 200, 100 wins, 200. You make that bet right now on Wednesday afternoon, 100 wins, 140. If they split the next two against Chicago and roll off 8 wins in 10 games against shitty teams, what's that price then? Plus 115? Plus 110? You never want to be late to the party, but I'm telling you, if they roll through the next 2 weeks or so and play 700 baseball, that price is going to react accordingly. Over the weekend, celebrated another wedding. Congrats to the Garlands. And another wedding for a Triple Crown race, I might add. Uncle Kirk absolutely crushed Pimlico this past Saturday. Hit the pick 3, hit a pick 4, and capped it off with early voting, winning the Preakness Stakes. He nailed it. 5 winner, 5-8 exacta box, 5-8-2 trifecta box, 5-8-2-4 superfecta box. Did it all. I never take credit for a horse race because I don't handicap horses. You know that. It's all Uncle Kirk. Yet, I'm running around this wedding weekend, rather, Friday at the bar. Hey, early voting. Hey, early voting. Who do you like? Early voting. Early voting, early voting. Fast forward to Saturday at the wedding. Announcement. Everybody would please head to the receptions and take your seats because we are about to start the ceremonies. Yeah, sorry, bro. The race is on in 3 minutes. You know, it's around that time. It's like 6:55. Attention, everybody to the ballroom area, and we are going to... No, sorry. We got skin on the race. And everybody that had bet early voting is going bananas. One guy ran in. I ran into one guy. He's like, I don't know why I bet him, but I bet early voting. I'm like, hello. Uncle Kirk did that for you. Pay your respects. That's two wedding weekends for two legs of the Triple Crown. Much better setup for the Preakness than I had at the Kentucky Derby when I was watching it on a cell phone slanted sideways and leaned up against two rock glasses. This was actually a full-on bar at a resort, so I was able to watch the race and actually see it on a television screen. Huge upgrade. And now I've got to find a wedding to crash for the Belmont on June 11th. I want to complete my trifecta. Every single 2022 Triple Crown race at a wedding. Not ideal, but you make it happen. And Uncle Kirk, again, just a rock star. You got to follow our guy at Winning Angle. He was money. He hit a couple horses. One was 5-1. One was 8-1 to win a race, and he wove those into a pick 4. Big ticket, big Saturday for Uncle Kirk at Pimlico, and always tip your cap and tip your bartenders. This Heat-Celtics series has been a war of attrition. We know that. Anybody who's watched it or paid any attention to it, it's been about who's healthy and which team is closer to full strength. 2-2 heading into Game 5 in South Beach. That'll be tonight, 8:30 tip, probably 8:45 tip. So hopefully you have enough time to digest this conversation before the game starts. There's an interesting scenario unfolding. There are respected sources in Boston that are reporting that the Miami Heat have a COVID outbreak, but nothing was put on the injury report. So you start to vet the sources, and you ask your sources in Boston, then you go to the Miami side, and you're hearing two completely different things. So for somebody who handicaps basketball games, football games, baseball games, hockey games, I know the two teams. I likely know who's in. I know the styles. I know what's going on. But now I am handicapping two sides of a conversation that are saying two completely different things. What I mean by that is that this point spread is going to run if this outbreak is real. And I have no idea who it is. Please don't ask. I have no idea. I am setting up tweet alerts for Shams and Brian Windhorst to come straight to my phone. What I can tell you is that Boston, at most sports books in game number 5, opened up like -1. There were some pick-ems, but it was clear that Boston was the favorite going into game number 5. As I look at the board right now on a Wednesday around 3 o'clock Eastern, we're starting to see some threes offshore and a 3 at the Westgate. So there's a position now on Boston. And then there's late steam on that number given the rumors of COVID. You know how this works with professionals. They vet the situation, they handicap the situation, and then they make a position. The best guys I talked to, they laid Boston. They took Boston pick. They laid 1. They laid 1.5. They laid 2. And now they're telling me, what can you find out? You can't find out anything because Miami is going to say nothing. That's how this COVID thing works. I've been doing this for 2 years now. The teams know more, but they're not letting you know. And the Boston sources are saying there are some Heat players here. The Miami faction is saying it's no players, it's a team broadcaster, it's a team position. But what do you think the Heat reporters are going to say? They're going to report what Pat Riley is telling them to say. That's usually how this works. I could just picture, like Godfather style, Armani suit. If you say anything, you know what I mean? That's how it works. These Heat reporters and Heat employees are not going to run to the press and be like, hey, there's a COVID thing happening. I'm watching the market move. And then the further conversation is, what happens if it's Bam Adebayo? What does the line move to? If it's Jimmy Butler, where does the line go? And then the market runs from there. Let's just say, hypothetically speaking, with a line right now of Boston -2.5, and that's with everybody assumed to be in. If it comes out at 5:30 Eastern that Bam Adebayo has COVID, that number's going to Boston -4. Even as I say that, that's probably not enough. 4.5. Because Bam is probably worth like 2.5 points. The open was 1, so the move to 2.5, and then another 1.5. Well, I guess 4 would make sense, but I don't know. It's between 4 and 5 if Bam is out. And then there's the chasers that'll look at the ticker and see Bam's out. Oh, let me bet Boston. If it's Jimmy Butler, we're talking about Boston -6. They can't win without Butler. I'm sorry. They just can't. They've proven that. They can't win without Jimmy Butler. Worst case scenario is that it's Jimmy and Bam. And then it's like, holy shit, how far do you move it? The books have tangible numbers on these players. We know that. I've written about this on NESN and Fox. Kenny White's got numbers on every player. Steph Curry, 6. Durant, 6. Giannis, 6. All these players are 5.5. Luka, Embiid, LeBron, Kawhi, Jokic, 5. Trae Young, 4.5. Butler's in that 3.5-4 range. Bam, as I said, I think he's like 2.5, maybe 2 on the lower side. So that's what? 6.5 points? 7 points if you round up? And when a line opens, Boston 1, that's Boston 8. But I still, without Bam and Jimmy, I'm not taking Miami +8. It's a fascinating situation, and this will all unfold. If something comes out, it will move and it will spread like wildfire. But I know people that are more than willing right now to lay 2.5, 3. So imagine what they'd be willing to lay if Jimmy or Bam, again, you don't know names. I'd love to have the names. I don't have them. I'm not close to Miami, nor will I pretend to be. Who is it? I have no idea. And maybe it is nothing. But the people I talk to think there's something. And the Heat this morning canceled shoot around. You're handicapping something you can't handicap. It's wild. Let's talk about hedging golf quickly. Longtime listener RK sent me a bet slip on Saturday night. He had a bet on Mito Pereira, a $75 bet to win almost $11,000 at the PGA Championship. And he said, what do I do? I said, well, it's tough because this is the old question. The sharp guys, the big money guys would tell you that, you know, hedging is not in their best interest because their bankrolls are big. They can't get a lot of action down, and it's minus EV to hedge at bad numbers. And I understand all that, but most of us that are betting on sports are not professional bettors. In fact, if you're listening to this podcast, you are not a professional bettor because you are busy betting sports, not listening to Chicken Dinner. So let's just say that you are in a position to where you bet $10 or $20 or $50 or say $75 on a golfer like Mito Pereira at 150 to 1. What do you do? Of course, hindsight is 20/20. But I told RK this, and I would tell you the same thing if you slid into my DMs and asked me. I said, well, you should bet on other golfers in the mix. And if you looked at that leaderboard heading into Sunday, there were a slew of golfers at these prices. Fitzpatrick, 4-1. Zalatoris, about 5-1. Cam Young, 8-1. Answer, 16. Thomas, 25-1. Now, that's just one sports book. I saw MGM had Thomas at 33-1. As I said, hindsight 20/20, because Mito going into the back nine is a great bet and a hedge would look stupid. But still, if you have a $75 bet on a golfer to win $11,000, how do you not spray some small bets? Come on. I get that if Mito wins and holds on, you're going to kick yourself, but are you really going to kick yourself if you win $11,000 and have to shave off like 400 in hedges? I wouldn't kick myself. And I think it's silly that we tell people what they should and shouldn't do when we have no idea what this money would mean to you. If you're betting $75 on a golfer, odds are good $11,000 is a big deal to you. So you do what you want to do with your bet. But if you lay it out this way, you take the $75 bet on Pereira to win $11,000 and look at the five golfers on the board heading into Sunday. Fitzpatrick, 4-1. Zalatoris, 5-1. Young, 8. Answer, 16. Thomas, 33. Let's just take five $75 bets, which is $375 in hedges. That's not a lot compared to the big figure of $11,000. So if all the hedges lose, you win $11,000 on Pereira minus $375 in hedges. You're there. We all understand that. If Fitz or Zalatoris win, you lose a little bit. You lose like $75 to $100, which was essentially your initial stake anyway. If Young wins, you profit $225. If Answer wins, you profit $825. If Thomas wins, you profit $2,100. Interesting, right? So the only way you really lose money is if Fitzpatrick wins the PGA Championship and you lose $75. But you cover all your other bases. You're not just betting on one golfer. You now have bets on six golfers, and the most you could lose is $75, but you come out on top in every other option. I'm sorry. Like, I get that it might not be plus EV, and it might go against the calculus and the advanced probabilities. But at the end of the day, if you make a $75 bet to win $11,000, you should come out ahead there. And I just gave you the options. I mean, if it's some of these guys, $225, $825, $2,100. That's all. That's just the reality of the situation. As for Rufus's ticket, Rufus Peabody, of course, He lives and dies with his numbers. And he's not going to make a minus EV hedge because, damn it, he's planted his flag in the ground. That's awesome. Great. Rufus also has the bankroll and the capital where he doesn't have to hedge. And I would also implore you to read Rufus's thoughts on hedging. He addressed the Mito Pereira no hedge. He had bets on him at like 300 to 1. I think he was going to make, you know, several hundred thousand dollars, and he did not hedge. Very solid read. I shared his post on my Twitter timeline at SP Shoot. But if you're betting, you know, $50, $75, $100 on golfers, and you have thousands on the line potentially to win, come on. You know what to do. Everybody's different. But if that's me, I'm spraying. I'm not leaving that tournament with nothing. Especially when you consider five $75 hedge positions costs about $400. And if the golfer you bet correctly ahead of time wins, you still come out with, what, $10,600? I'm willing to eat that. Are you? Two more quick things before we get to Eric Eager. Hayden Winks, he works for Underdog Fantasy. He posted a list of strength of schedule movers. This is for the NFL. The Giants went from the 31st easiest schedule, so the second toughest schedule, if you will. They went from 31 to the number one easiest schedule in the NFL. And Brian Daboll is now a part of that equation. The Commanders went from 32 to 6. The Lions, 28 to 5. Bears, 24 to 4. Jaguars, 23 to 12. All of those schedules much easier. And I repeat, the Giants from 31st to 1st. Meanwhile, the LA Rams went from the 17th easiest schedule to the 31st easiest schedule. Second toughest. The Patriots, 8th to 25th. Hello. Bills, 1st to 18th. And the Bengals, wow, 3rd to 26th. Patriots and Bengals stock going down per the schedule, per the metrics. And that Patriots schedule, I don't know if I've talked about it yet on Chicken Dinner. If you're a Patriots fan, I would advise you not to look at the schedule from week 12 on. Holy cow. What a nightmare schedule that is. You just look it up and you let me know how you think it's going to go. And the last thing, Peter King wrote around 15,000 words on all 32 NFL teams. Great read. I don't have an hour and a half to read it, so I skimmed it. And I took the cliff notes for you. King is extremely high on the Bills and the Chargers. Okay, that makes sense. His top five teams, Bills, Chargers, Chiefs, Rams, Packers. And he's shorting the New England Patriots. King has them ranked number 17. And here's his excerpt on the New England Patriots. Quote, every year is a new year. Every season's a snowflake, always different. But the Patriots, particularly after the worst beatdown in a big game a Belichick team ever absorbed in New England, 47-17 Buffalo, you have to be thinking, Buffalo's what we were in the first 19 years of this century. It's crucial for Mac Jones to be better in year two if New England has a prayer to catch Buffalo to stay above Miami in the East. But will he be better? Jones was a 69% passer while starting his career 9-4. He was a 61% passer finishing the season 1-4. And now he's lost his mentor and offensive coordinator, Josh McDaniels, in favor of either Joe Judge, Matt Patricia, or some combination of the two. In 39 years of college and NFL coaching combined, neither Judge nor Patricia has ever had quarterback coaching as part of their job description. That seems problematic for a quarterback who needs to get better. End quote. I also look at the anatomy of a number. Last year's win total on New England, open 9, close 9.5. They go 10-7 with a pretty easy schedule. I remember writing about the over on Nesson.com when it opened 9. Because I thought eventually they would move along from Cam Newton to Mac Jones. I didn't think it was going to happen week 1, but I felt good about that. Usually, quarterbacks regress in year two because there's a whole year of film and footage on said quarterback heading into the second season. That's one knock. Number two, you lost J.C. Jackson, your number one cornerback. who was filling a big void for losing Stephon Gilmore. So your two best defensive backs are gone in back-to-back seasons. And the offensive play calling situation is definitely a cause for concern. But the most important thing is I look at the way this win total has opened in 22. Just told you. Last year, open 9, they win 10, make the playoffs. The books open New England's win total 8.5 this year on a team that just made the playoffs. So the books are taking a stance against New England. Usually that's not a good sign for a team that wins 10, book opens 8.5, daring you to bet over. They're daring you to take the over. And who knows? Maybe Mac Jones and Ramondre Stevenson can find some magic. Maybe that's the future of the franchise. I don't know that I would bet my money on that over, though, this year. And I saw a bet one of the books had. Would you rather bet New England to finish first or fourth? Whew. I don't know. I'm very high on Buffalo. I like them over the win total. I think they're the best team in football. Does that mean they're going to win the Super Bowl? No. But they'll be favored. I'm going to guess they're going to be favored in, if not all six, they'll be favored in 5 AFC East games. They might be I don't even think they'll be a dog in Miami. I think Buffalo's the clear-cut favorite in the AFC East, and I think they'll be favored in all six games. I like them to win 13 games this year. They're loaded on both sides of the ball. They lost Dable, but guess what? They have Josh Allen. I think Ken Dorsey's going to be fine as the offensive coordinator. This New England team, let's get through training camp. Let's get through all that stuff and see what happens there. But I am not very optimistic on the New England Patriots. Joining us again on Chicken Dinner, he runs R&D for Pro Football Focus, also co-host of the Pro Football Focus Forecast. He's Eric Eager at PFF underscore Eric. Let's play a game to start. True or false? I saw you in Boston. We had about 6 shots of whiskey at my bar, and you turned to me and said, when am I coming back on Chicken Dinner?
It's true. I'm a mother clucker myself, so I feel like if I can't give back, I'm just a taker here. So I love being on the show.
I've never had somebody at a bar that I talk to all the time look at me and go, I need to come back on the show and I want to talk WNBA. I almost fell off the stool.
I love, the WNBA is great because the games are only 2 hours long, which immediately makes it better than MLB. And then the markets are nowhere close to as sharp as the NBA, which makes it a lot more fun. Obviously, NBA is a great product, but the sharpest people in the world bet that sport. So, yeah, it's such a great it's fun. It's also relatively inexpensive. Game Pass is $30 a year or something like that. So, you get situations where the injury news, I had 4.5 points of closing line value because I found out Breanna Stewart was playing a few hours before everybody else did. So then, you get plus 3.5. And by the end of the game, you're laying minus 1. And those are good feelings, usually.
That's what Kevin Holland was talking about on the show last week. He's like, the injury information, if you can mine it correctly and get ahead of the curve, that is usually the slowest sport to adjust because the handle is so low. Now, they'll take a bet in Vegas, and somebody will say, uh-oh, we just took a bet on 631 Las Vegas. Let's just move it, and they'll over-move it sometimes. A team at plus 4 takes a nickel or a dime bet, they'll move them to plus 2 just off principle. But they are slowest to react to the injury news in the WNBA. And then the other side of that challenge is they don't really know how far to move the number based on their own player power ratings because they don't really have any.
Right. There was a total I talked to you about, I think it was early last week, where, I think overnight it was 162. I take over 162. I wake up in the morning, it's 163.5. I want to take it again. And the book's immediately sorry, sir, it's now 166. And then it closes 168.5. You're just not getting, in other major totals in the NBA can move quite a bit, but they're also bigger. So a 6-point move when the total's 225 is a little bit different than when it's 160. It's just a good way, if you're I'm I bet for money, but I'm not a professional. And like, you know, if you're a recreational, you know, semi-professional, that kind of thing, and you're trying to, you know, make money and, you know, you don't necessarily want to have to bet that much in a liquid market. Like these markets, I think, are a lot better just because they help you, you know, sort of learn how they work. And, you know, that was the same thing with the NFL draft as well. Obviously, you know, you saw the Jordan Davis, how much that moved, how much the Quay Walker stuff moved. These are always, you know, for starting bettors, these markets are great because they teach you sort of how, you know, to be on the right side and how oftentimes, you know, betting is more, it's less about picking winners all the time and more about, you know, moving with the market.
So you have your models on a lot of different sports, and we're going to talk, don't worry, we'll talk a lot about the NFL and some of the draft stuff, win totals, divisional markets, but I'm curious, you've been crunching numbers on WNBA future markets. So right now, you know, the consensus numbers for most of these books, you've got the Aces around 3-1, the Sun around 4, Sky around 9-2, and then you got the Storm on the 4 line at about 5-1. Those are your top four. Do you agree with those four, at least, not in order, but do you think those are the four best teams right now?
I do. I think, you know, you've seen last night the Storm got their second win. They were 1-3. Brianna Stewart had gotten COVID and missed a few games. They also weren't as strong in some of the games that she did play. One against the Aces where they got kind of beat up a little bit. The Sky were the loser last night. And they're a team I always joke around because they're a team that can get a 30-point lead and lose a 30-point lead as fast as anybody. Now, they got hot and they got strong down the stretch and won the championship last year. Candace Parker, you know, is a little bit later in her career. So I feel like for her, you know, it's more of a LeBron effect where, you know, during the regular season that her teams are not going to have the greatest record, but then in the playoffs, you know, they'll turn it on. And that's why, you know, for example, like 538's models and all that always underestimated the Cavs with LeBron because they weren't the strongest regular season team. And then he would play great in the playoffs. You know, that's where I think the Sky are. Like during the season, I just don't think they're ever going to strike you as extremely impressive. But in the playoffs, they're going to be a house. I know, you know, the last guest you had to talk about WNBA gave out Mystics. I think it was 12-1. That's, you know, that's a bet. That's like the only futures bet I really have. That I have it at 11-1. It's 10-1 now. You know, that's, you know, Elena Delladone has, you know, missed almost all of the last 2 years because of COVID and, you know, because of, I think, a back injury. Prior to that, they won the 2019 championship, and they have some of the players that I think can help them elevate there. If you're looking for a long shot, I don't really think any of the other teams, the Lynx, the Sparks, you know, Wings, Liberty, Dream, or Fever, I don't think any of them really have a shot. The only team 10-1 or better who I could see winning at all would be the Mystics.
Interestingly enough, I have Odds Boom up right now, and the Mystics at the Superbook in Vegas are 6-1. So 100 wins 6, but at FoxBet and PointsBet, the Mystics are 12-1. There's a lot of volatility in this future market, and even a team like the Sky, 3-1 at Twin Spires, 3-1 at Bet Parks, plus 650 at the Superbook, and that's a team that's on the 3 line. The Aces, plus 250 at the Superbook, plus 350 at PointsBet. That's a whole dollar on a team that's on the 1 line. There's a lot of volatility and there's a lot of variety in this future market. It's very important for you to shop around. If you don't have Odds Boom, that's a very good resource. You go to oddsboom.com, find the sport you're looking for, and they give you every single sports book in a column. Bang, here's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And they have about 12 different columns, and it allows you to see how different these odds are. So, Eric, look, there's a book up right now, two books actually, that have the Mystics at 12 when one of the sharpest books in Vegas have 6.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, Elena Delladone's an MVP candidate every time she plays. I know she's a little older now. You know, they get the Alicia Clark, who is kind of like an all-defensive, you know, team player. She missed last year with a broken foot. Prior to that, she was on Seattle, and Seattle won 2 championships in 3 years with her as the starting, you know, 3 or 4 for them. So there's an underrated reason why you should like them this year. And honestly, I think the other reason is just like there are flaws with all these teams. I think the Las Vegas Aces are the best team in the league. But the Mystics came back on them from, I believe it was like 15 down just a couple days ago. And they're a team, you know, Becky Hammond's the new coach for Bill Laimbeer. There's going to be a little bit of an adjustment there. And you know, they're not exactly the best 3-point shooting team, which means, you know, there are going to be some games where, you know, they're trying to win, you know, 2 points at a time. And as we see in the NBA, that's like, you know, that's hard to do consistently, is to win games 2 points at a time. So, you know, that's why I wouldn't take it with them. I've loved the Aces forever. They're kind of, you know, when you think about football, for example, they're kind of like the Buffalo Bills, where they've been one of, if not the best teams in the league for a few years now, and have never really sniffed or gotten close. They made the finals in the bubble year, but haven't really come close to winning a championship.
I pulled one of your tweets here, and I want you to clarify what's going on. Everyone is wrong about Jalen Hurts. Go.
I mean, Jalen Hurts is Jalen Hurts hasn't been great. If you pay all the quarterbacks the same amount of money, you'd rather have a quarterback that's different than Jalen Hurts. But you pay Jalen Hurts like less than 1% of your salary cap. And so the fact that he can give you kind of league average or maybe slightly below average play for that price, that's an extremely good value. And you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that the Eagles have to back up the truck and pay him. You know, the hard part with the NFL is the only quarterback that was coming off of a rookie deal since the new CBA that got anything other than the max deal was Blake Bortles, right? So if you're an agent for a quarterback, you're not going to be satisfied with the Blake Bortles deal, right? So you're either going to go after the 40-50 million dollar deals, or you're going to have to settle for the Mitch Trubisky, Jameis Winston type of deals. So if those are the two choices I'm presented, I also think that the Eagles shouldn't view Jalen Hurts as a long-term answer. And that's not something people want to hear. People want to hear either Jalen Hurts is the long-term, unquestioned quarterback for the Eagles, or they want to say he sucks. But the answer is in between. The answer is, for 4 years here, 2020 to 2023, Jalen Hurts is going to be a pretty damn good investment for the Eagles. And after that, he's probably not going to be worth the money.
Would you rather bet regular season win total? Well, that number got popped up 9.5 now at some books.
Yep.
That's a very wild number, because I remember when the draft happened, I haven't looked at this number in a while. When the draft happened, you could have gone over 8 at some places. And after the draft, it was 8.5 -120 -0.25. I see a couple books now at 9.5 -15 over -0.25 over. So never mind, because you're not going over 9.5, I believe.
No, I would make it more like 9. I did like over 8.5. There were times when it was +110 to go over 8.5 with the Eagles. You know, Dallas is basically a coin flip in the markets to melt down this year and not win the NFCs.
Yeah.
But I also think that there are other good content. Like, I think Washington, you know, Wentz is a significant upgrade over Taylor Heineke. I know Wentz stinks, but like, there are various levels of stinking in the NFL. That Commanders defense struggled last year, I think, in many ways due to COVID. I think they'll be better. And I think you can't get any worse than the coaching the Giants have had the last 2 years. So, you know, you add a very good two really good players to the line of scrimmage for them in the top 7 of the draft. And, you know, a head coach who average maybe expectations in Brian Daboll. Like, I think you're going to see a competitive Giants team. So, yeah, that's too rich for my blood for the Eagles. I also, there are teams that I wouldn't bet over their win total, but I would bet them in sort of fatter tail markets, teams like Green Bay, teams like Kansas City, teams that are in transition. I don't really like betting like anything -110 with them, but I do like betting stuff that's 10-1 with them, because, you know, if they get it together, who cares what happened in September type of thing.
That's really interesting.
Whereas with win totals, like, you care what happens in September because, you know, that matters. And we saw that with the last few New England Patriots years. I think in 2018, for example, they went under their season win total at 11 wins, but they won the Super Bowl. Well, the loss to Jacksonville and the loss to Detroit in September of 2018 matters if you're betting the -110. It ultimately didn't matter when you bet them, you know, whatever it was that year, 5-1, 6-1 to win the Super Bowl.
So give me a fatter tail team for 2022. I love that term, by the way.
It's Kansas City or Green Bay, right? Like, you know, those two teams, you know, Andy Reid's only gone under his season win total once, and that was last year as a member of the Chiefs. You know, Matt LaFleur's won 13 games 3 straight years. I think like neither one of those teams views that as the goal anymore, by the way, too. Like when the Chiefs went all in after their first Super Bowl in 2020, you know, they wanted to be the best team in the league. And there was a significant value in that because no one knew Josh Allen was that good. No one knew Herbert and Burrow were that good. Tom Brady left the conference. So there was a lot of value in shoving the chips to the middle and trying to get the one seed in the AFC in 2020. In 2022, every team is shoving the chips into the middle of the table. And so even if you try your best, you know, to be the one seed in the AFC, you're probably not going to be it, right? So Kansas City pulls back a little bit. They trade Tyreek Hill. They get 12 draft picks. They end up executing on 10. I think long-term, they're way better. Once those teams have to start paying Burrow and Herbert the money that the Chiefs pay Patrick Mahomes, the Chiefs are going to be in better situation. This year, though, like I think that they're content getting a 4 or 5 seed, you know, and putting the best quarterback in the NFL to work in January. And so as such, like, I'm not even betting the Chiefs in the fat tail markets now. I'm probably waiting until after September, you know, because you got to acclimate all those players onto your roster. Same thing with Green Bay. I think Green Bay, you know, was optimized to win 13 games, but not win a playoff game the last 3 years. Now they trade Devontae Adams. They spread out the wealth in their receiving core. And that might be a better recipe for them to win in January.
I saw Rodgers' passing yardage number, and I don't know how you feel about these markets. His number is about 700 yards lower than Mahomes. And last year, A. Rodgers throws for 4,100 yards. He loses Adams, sure, but I saw his number at a couple different sports books at 3,800. He's gone over that number. I hate to preview, but he's gone over that number when healthy in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 straight seasons. Last year, his interception percentage was under 1. He's still getting the ball down the field with good zip and good accuracy. I don't understand why he's 500-600 yards lower than all the other elite quarterbacks.
It's a good point. I think some people will say, oh, they're going to lean on the running game. They're going to go to Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon more, you know. But at the same time, like, this is a team that already leans a ton on the run game. They already did that, right? And he would go over that total. And he went over that total missing a game and a half, right? One with COVID and then one at the end of the season when, you know, they didn't have anything to play for. This year, they might not be as good. I know their division stinks, but they might not be as good. So they might be involved in more games where he has to throw the football. So that benefits him as well. I don't think they become more run heavy than they've been. They're one of the more, not percentage wise, but their offense is constructed around the running game as much as any team in the league. So I don't think they lean more into that. They get Robert Tonyan, the tight end, back, which is good. Sammy Watkins is a player that can make plays when healthy. You know, Christian Watson's a player who can make plays downfield. So I sort of agree with you there. I also will take the Brady over auto bet every single time. The guy doesn't get hurt. That team throws a lot, and Bruce Arians is gone, and Bruce Arians was the only person in the room that wanted to run the ball to Leonard Fournette. So I think Brady, like, Brady was the MVP in the league last year, not because his statistics, you know, per pass were that important, but the Bucs basically said, look, you're throwing 70% of the time. And he was the best quarterback in league history last year among players who played for teams who threw the ball more than 2/3 of the time.
I also hate, Eric, how much I love the Baltimore Ravens going into this season. I know we're talking a lot of football in the middle or end of May, but that's okay because you've studied this league immensely and covered this league for a long time. You know how these things work. And, you know, you look at their injury numbers last year. I think they were one of the most injured teams as far as missed snaps in the NFL. And I do love John Harbaugh more than most. I'm higher on Lamar Jackson than most. But I don't like the win total. I like them +2, +210 to win the division. Are you with me there, or am I going too far?
Yeah, I have them in all of the plus money markets too. Like 9.5 -140 is too rich for my blood because, you know, they were the most injured team in the NFL, especially after you adjust for value. Like, their top four salary cap hits this year were Ronnie Stanley, Marlon Humphrey, Marcus Peters, and Lamar Jackson, all of whom missed half of the last season or more. So, you know, and still the last six games of the year, they went 0-6. 5 of those games were decided by 3 points or less. The only game they got blown out by was by the Bengals in Cincinnati when they were starting Josh Johnson at quarterback. So there's a, you know, and they won a lot of close games at the beginning of the year. So that kind of clouds it, you know, the Detroit game, the Indianapolis game, so on and so forth. But, you know, for me, I don't think I can go over 9.5 minus 140 now. Really smart people like Rob Pasola and those guys, they've all gobbled that up and moved that up. You have to go in the, you know, and you also have to think, okay, how, you know, a lot of your handicap here is how much do you think Deshaun Watson's going to get suspended for? If you think it's 6 games, then I think the market's probably fair. If you think it's 16 games or 17 games over the whole season, like obviously all of those teams, even Pittsburgh, are a value right now. So that's part of the handicap as well. But I, you know, I have Lamar Jackson MVP bets. I have Ravens to win the Super Bowl and the AFC bets, because to me, it's, again, it's a similar thing as last year. I think John Harbaugh keeps their water level high, but I think that level we saw last year, it's about 8 wins, right? So if things go really, really poorly, and they can, Lamar's a running quarterback who can get hurt at any time. You know, he's also kind of not the best passer in the league. I think he's a good enough passer when you fold in everything else. But he's certainly not like a guy where if he was limited physically, you could depend upon his drop back passing game all year. So there are issues with laying minus 110 stuff with them. But I also like the situation where everything comes together like it did in 2019, and they're a 14 win team. Like, I think they have that capability as well. If they stay healthy, you know, they have, you know, Mike McDonald coming over from Michigan to run their defense. Like, I think that there's a lot of good there in Baltimore. I just don't know if I want, you know, to only get a dollar back when I lay a dollar.
I agree with that. You could find them 2-1, 210, 220 to win the division. You can find them 12-1 to win the conference. I'm not at the Super Bowl level yet, but if you are inclined, 22-1. That's the ceiling on Baltimore to win the Super Bowl. I really only want to spend our conversation touching on one last thing, and I think this is important to hear somebody like you who trusts a model and trusts your numbers. We still all go through these cold streaks, man. And I talked about it on the last show. I told you before we hopped on here. On this show, I've lost 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 in a row on the spreadsheet. And I hate losing. I'm very competitive. And I don't want to give people bad information. I don't think these are bad picks. I just know they're bad results. Nobody likes to stare in the face of an 0-8 run. But then I get sort of conservative, and then I don't send out a pick for a couple days because if I'm running cold, I don't want to share that shit. You know what I mean? How do you deal with the inevitable cold streak?
I mean, I think we all have the same insecurities, right? I mean, and you know, when you bet real dollars too, like, that hurts, right? Like there are, you know, your bankroll goes down and you're like, okay, do I keep drawing down on this? You know, especially now, you know, with the stock market, the way it is and everything like that, like there are second order things that can exacerbate, you know, your process. And, you know, I think when, you know, for me, I was talking to you about the USFL, a league where I think I have a pretty good process. I even have a model, you know, we have access to data at PFF that I think is pretty sharp. You know, I get down on that league. I get down on the WNBA. Those are the two things I'm betting right now. And I get significant closing line value. I bet an over last night in Seattle, versus, you know, Chicago in the WNBA and I get closing line, a couple percent of closing line value. It's like, okay, I'm feeling good. You know, I the New Orleans Breakers game, I tweeted out the other day, you know, what does it feel like to lay minus 190? It closes minus 180 and you know, you're already going to lose, you know, type of thing. And, you know, there are questions like obviously for some of the less liquid markets, like closing line value means less, right? Because, you know, you don't have millions and millions of people putting down tens of thousands of dollars on games. So closing line value is not everything, but it certainly is a good indicator that other smart people are betting, with you, right? You know, you can, you know, this is why analytics are really good. I know a lot of people will deride, you know, the term, but, you know, it's important to go back and look and beg, okay, what was the expected score of that game? Oh, okay. Well, the game I just got unlucky, right? Like, and I think a lot of people just say they got unlucky without actually going back and doing the work and that kind of thing as well. So there are a number of ways that you can sort of check and test and say, okay, is my process good? Because ultimately results are just, you know, at some point they're just secondary to the process. You need to have them over the long term. And in the long term, they track pretty well with process. But in the short term, you're going to get a lot of results that aren't necessarily indicative of how good of bets you're placing. And you know, you have to take solace in that. And, you know, if those kinds of things, you know, keep you from wanting to bet, maybe sports betting isn't necessarily for you, or, you know, you lower your bankroll. So it's an amount of money that doesn't impact how you feel about the games, because ultimately we want to have fun watching sports as well. But if it's something where you're like, okay, I'm really confident in this, I'm going to go back to it. You know, I think that's indicative of a good process.
Process is key when you break down sports, that's for sure. He's Eric Eager. Great follow on Twitter at @PFF_Eric. You could find his work on Pro Football Focus. I can't wait for Pro Women's Basketball Focus to launch. I'm sure you're championing for that behind the scenes.
Yeah, Mr. Collinsworth has yet to sign off on it, but he's close. He's close.
Mr. Collinsworth. I like that. Does he make you call him that?
No, I call him that, and I think it's sort of like when the people in the office say, hey, Dr. Eager, and I'm like, easy on that doctor shit. You know, I'm like, I always call him Mr. Collinsworth because, I don't know. I mean, somebody who's worth that much money, I feel like you just have to, right?
I love that. I got a hoodie coming your way, and I don't know when you're back in Boston, but I'm sure we'll tear it up again when you get here. We'll just make sure we get Kevin Cole in bed by like 8:30.
Yeah, it's 7:30 if you really want to be safe.
All right, man. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me on.
That about does it for Chicken Dinner. Thanks to Eric Eager for hopping on the show. The slide continues, and I am taking some days off on the day-to-day handicapping here. 249, 263, and 8. Down a little bit. Down 0.8. 10 straight losses on the spreadsheet. Not good. Not good. Coming up on the show, we'll talk to Stormy Bonantoni from VSiN, the host of My Guys the Desert. She also does some work for ESPN. What's it like to work with Uncle Brent? Some stories that you won't want to miss coming up on the show later this week. Cash your tickets, make some money. We'll talk to you next time right here on Chicken Dinner.
Until I'm through, it can't take me home. Everything that comes out of my trombone.